Dorothea there with Theodore. Dorothea, top of the right circle, reels it in, hands it off. Carlson shoots off the post and home! William Carlson, long post and in for a power play goal!
Live from the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com.
Shoots, kick save, Fleury. Rebound loose, a shot, and no! It goes through Fleury for a goal!
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your home for access with the team, exclusive player interviews, and breaking news from around the National Hockey League. Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace hanging out inside T-Mobile Arena. Chris Chapman back inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the game days and non-game days. That's all that exists right now in the world of a hockey fan. There are game days if you follow a team in the postseason, and then there are non-game days. Yesterday, a non-game day. Though, I spent about 12 and a half, 13 hours on my couch watching hockey. I don't really care. I'm not making apologies. It was awesome. Chapman, I don't know if you partook yesterday or really over the course of the weekend. We were working Saturday night, but Sunday was awesome. The ability to sit in one place, to not get up at all, and to watch game after game after game after game, it was a singularly fantastic experience for me. I loved every minute of it, and there were some really good games yesterday. However, none of that really matters or means anything to us today, because today all that matters is that the Golden Knights are taking on the Dallas Stars, game number four, opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Golden Knights, with a victory, could take a 3-1 series lead. Of course, that indicates that Game 3 did not go well for the Vegas Golden Knights. It was a 3-2 loss in overtime to the Dallas Stars on Saturday. We were about 3.5 minutes away from double overtime, and I told you, Chapman, you and I talked about it going into it. We kind of mentioned it at times on Saturday that we expected overtime in that game. It delivered. We got a solid performance in terms of overtime hockey. It wasn't too quick of an overtime. It didn't end before you could really sit down in your seats and enjoy the tension in the building. So I think it went well, and if we dip our feet into overtime in game number three, I cannot wait to see what game four has in store for us. 702-876-1340, that's the number. 702-876-1340, as we do every single week on this show. First segment of the week belongs to you. No different right now. We've got a show. We're going to do it. 702-876-1340. Give us a call. And before we get everything loaded up, and maybe to entice you to call a little bit, I want to know if Game 3, the performance from Logan Thompson, was that the greatest goaltending performance in Golden Knights history? If you have a thought, an opinion, call in right now and let me know. Because when you look at it in a vacuum, Logan Thompson very nearly stole a playoff victory from the Dallas Stars. Logan Thompson almost single-handedly got the Golden Knights a 3-0 series lead. Logan Thompson put together one of the greatest performances of his professional career, and it leaves us sitting here thinking about the entirety of that game and the entirety of the Golden Knights organization. We have had phenomenal games from Marc-Andre Fleury. There have been some really solid Robin Leonard performances, specifically in the postseason. I'm thinking about that Game 7 against the Vancouver Canucks, that big glove save. That was a massive moment. But was that performance from Logan Thompson the greatest goaltending performance in Golden Knights history? That's what I want to hear from you. I want to know where you stand on that one. 702-876-1340. Then we can get into whatever else you want to talk about. Let's go out to the phone lines, bring in Mike. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Okay, we'll start with that. I thought the game that Flower made, the save that they have bronzed in a statue, might have been his best. And whether it was a better overall game
was hold on. Was that against Toronto?
Yeah, it was a regular season game.
Right, where he dives back and it's against Toronto and it got, I believe, Mike Babcock fired?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not bad when you get an entire coach fired because of it. But, yeah, that might have been a little better, and I don't know that. But it's hard to say that an entire game could have been done and played any better at that position. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about a lot of things that are going on, a lot of things. And each game is its own chapter. So I'm going to let people think about maybe that particular one. Now, the recency bias will kill a lot of memories of maybe some of the very best goaltending games we've ever had. Mm-hmm. But you want to be careful not to be too recently biased over that.
Oh, I don't have to be careful about that. I think that was the greatest goaltending performance of a Golden Knights goaltender that we've ever seen.
It's certainly top three. I mean, I don't want to crown it number one yet. But yeah, if I really sat down and thought about it, I mean, you gave me like 10 seconds. Maybe some other folks will have thoughts on other particular games.
Come on, Mike, you got to be quick.
You didn't know you were going to do that. Yeah. I'm more concerned about the meltdown of Connor Hellebuck. What in the world happened there?
The Colorado Avalanche can score goals, and the Winnipeg Jets in front of Connor Hellebuck have been bad, just terrible defensively in front of him.
Yeah. I mean, he just, literally had to sit down in favor of an old Golden Knight.
Well, Mike, because he's been torched the entire series because the Winnipeg Jets have done exactly what they did last year in the postseason. They won a game, thought it would be easy, and they've packed it in the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's exactly what they've done. And Hellebuck is the unfortunate process that happens with that. And he may win the Vezina Trophy. That's the irony of it all.
Well, it's a good thing they don't take playoffs into account.
No, not at all. And it's fortunate because he would never win it if they did.
Sure.
I want to ask you one specific question.
Okay.
About a hybrid player, and he's been on my brain for several days, maybe weeks. Matt Rempe of the New York Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Rempe has come into prominence lately. He started his career. I did a little bit of research just to make sure I wasn't a complete toad in trying to explain what I'm going to try to say here about Rempe.
Uh-huh.
He's a 6'8", 241 man-child.
He's a unicorn.
What's that?
He's a unicorn.
He's a unicorn, yeah. I mean, we had Jumbo Joe Thornton. We've had other big guys, but they always play defense. This guy plays a fairly good game of offense. And now we don't know if he'll be a good player or not. He's only 21.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a sixth-round draft choice, I found out. Did not know that of the Rangers back in the day. The thing about him is, and this is the question I have,
yeah.
In your humble opinion, will this be the kind of player that an NHL franchise general manager will seek out in the draft in the future, like one per team? And more importantly, will kids gravitate toward hockey that would have done so maybe toward basketball or football in the past? Is that possible because of a Matt Rempe?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, you're talking about just specifically his size, right? The fact that he's 6'7", the fact that he is a big man playing hockey. I think that the greater poster child for that would have been Zdeno Chara, right? Like, you look at Chara, you mentioned Joe Thornton, another tall individual, a big man, and thanks, Mike, for the call, that, you know, might have been or ushered in another wave of a different type of player from just a body mechanic standpoint. With Rempe, I don't know, because I'll be really honest, I don't know how long Matt Rempe is going to be in the league. And Chapman, you can chime in here at any point in time. You let me know when you want to talk. But Rempe has scored 2 points in 17 games. The NHL, in my estimation, in my view, from where I'm sitting right now, is moving further and further away from the need for an enforcer, further and further away from a guy that can only give you 4.5, 5 minutes a night because you can't trust him to hold back on a hit. You can't trust him to not take undisciplined penalties. I mean, you look at Matt Rempe, the fact of the matter is he's been thrown out of, you know, at least 10 to 15, maybe 20% of the professional hockey games that he has played at the National Hockey League level because of borderline, dangerous, reckless hits. Now, can he rein it in? Can he hone it in? Probably. Is that going to make him as effective as a player? Probably not. And I don't know that there's enough offensive production to kind of back up his ability for staying power in the league. Now, listen, he's taking advantage of an opportunity. I'm all about that for a young player. If he grows and he learns and he understands when to pick his spots and he can kind of dial it back from crossing that line habitually, then I think maybe we can have that discussion in a couple of years. But we need to see what his longevity is. Right now, he's played 17 games in the National Hockey League. I don't know that that's enough of a sample size for general managers around the league to say, we need a 6'7" guy that goes out there, hits everything, even if it's borderline, and puts us in a position where, you know, 10% of the games, we might be playing down a forward because we, A, don't have him available because he's been kicked out of the game, or B, can't trust him in the second and third period if we're protecting a lead or we need offense to come back in a game.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think guys like him are I don't want to say phased out of the game, but I think general managers are now looking for guys who can score up and down the lineup.
Yeah,
they don't want guys to get tossed. They don't want guys fighting. The sport has become too much of an investment in players. I mean, think about it. Look at just go to Cap Friendly and look at what guys make. Look at what most of the guys in the league are making. If I'm a general manager, I don't want to lose my $4.5 million a year forward because he broke his hand in a fight. Like, I just don't want to see that if I'm a general manager. I think guys like Dale Hunter, you know, he was a guy who could score 20 goals. Mm-hmm. But he was also, I mean, I guess by today's standards, we would categorize him as a goon. Although
yeah.
I don't really know. I don't think he was a goon. He was a skilled player. But guys like him, guys like Tom Wilson, ironically, both play for the Capitals. I think we're not going to see as many of those guys in the league. I mean, the guy who coached here year one, Gerard Gallant. I mean, he was one of the toughest players in the league in his day.
But could score.
He was a guy who could go out and score 30 goals.
And so this is actually a really great text from Kelly McGinnis. If you're talking track record of big forwards and their longevity, maybe look at Tage Thompson. I couldn't agree more. You're talking about a 6'6" guy, a unicorn by a lot of different standards, but he scores, right? It's not big hits with Tage Thompson. It's not necessarily leaning into the size and the physicality that way. Tage Thompson scored 132 goals in 372 games. That's going to keep you in the league. That's going to be a scenario where, you know, maybe taller athletes gravitate toward hockey, or maybe general managers aren't afraid to go with a guy that's got a little bit more range and a little bit more of a lanky type of build, because you have proof of concept that it can work for a forward because of Tage Thompson. You have proof of concept that it can work for a defenseman because of Zdeno Chara. And you go back and look at some of the other players that were, you know, 6'4", 6'5", or above. I don't know, to me, from a size standpoint, that Matt Rempe really does push the needle, because, again, I don't think he does enough inside of a game that helps teams win. I know that you can draw energy from the hits, and I know the fights are fun, whatever. I just wonder if this is a flash in the pan, or if Rempe's going to be able to find some longevity. That remains to be seen, but right now, that role, I don't know how much longer it's truly going to be in the National Hockey League. 702-876-1340, that's the number, 702-876-1340. We have lines open. Game 3, Logan Thompson, was that the greatest Vegas Golden Knight goaltending performance you've ever seen? Was it the best in franchise history? Let me know, and then we can go any direction you want to. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Bring in Keith. Hey, Keith, how you doing?
Doing well, Ryan. The short answer is yes.
Yeah.
That was the single best goaltending performance, bar none.
Yeah.
The Knights should not have even been in that game. After two periods, it should have been 4-0, 4-1. Tops. Mm-hmm. It was an absolute shutdown performance. What we didn't see in that second and third period was the strangulating defense going through the neutral zone. They got so many more the Stars got so many more shots.
Yeah.
That was the complete opposite of what we saw in game two.
Yeah, and, I agree.
You know, and Logan Thompson was there to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Just one quick thing regarding Rempe.
Yeah.
What I'd be my biggest concern is if I'm a GM, it isn't so much the hits and everything, it's the decision making process.
Yeah.
Where you're, and I think Chapman hit it on the head again with the fact that he's going to be a flash in the pan unless he's able to make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be interesting to see. And one more thing regarding Mr. Chapman.
Yeah.
He can wear two hats, be a man of the people, but still have his journalistic integrity.
So you think he can be a voice of the fans without being a fan?
He can wear both hats.
How does he do that?
Well, it's real simple. He takes what we give as far as information as fans,
mm-hmm.
and he's able to distribute it to the masses.
Yeah, I read my Twitter. I read my replies.
So your recycling takes is what you're telling
no,
me.
No, what I do
no,
is
no,
I,
no, 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 I, no, 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 no. It's not recycling. It's redispersing.
Yes.
Oh, there it is.
Redistribution.
There it is.
I'm like...
It's a semantic argument, yes,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It's still very valid.
Hey, yes. Keith, that's the greatest call we've ever had on this program. Well done. Like
Thank you
have, thanks so much, Keith.
Yep.
Chapman, Keith, flat out, just gave you all the ammunition.
Well,
that's
what I said. I said on Friday.
No,
I
know, but you couldn't verbalize it way that Keith did.
No, well, I mean, sometimes I get caught up in what I'm going to say, but. No, I mean, it's right. It's redistribution. It's like me taking all the tax dollars from people and then giving it back out to the people after I've had my share of it. So
sure. It's
redistribution of thoughts of the fans. But I appreciate that, Keith. It's a great call. You're right. It probably was the best call we've ever had. But I'm gonna chime in here because I think in the playoffs, I think and I'm just racking my brain trying to think of great playoff performances by Golden mm-hmm. Knight goalies, and I can't think of one that was better. But I think there is some recency bias here because, look, last year we saw Adin Hill come back from injury, and he made his first start in a while, and I think it was in March against the New Jersey Devils, and he made 47 out of 50 saves. The Devils were up 2-1 at the end of one period in that game, and it could have been 5 or 6-1 with the amount of shots that they had, the way they moved the puck. Dawson Mercer was like a lightning bolt that night. And that was a pretty incredible performance. And that was by Adin Hill. I think when Robin Lehner first got here, that like very early in his days here before we were shut down by COVID.
He didn't lose.
He was unbeatable. I mean, he not only did he have like one or two great games, it seemed like he had like three or four great games before COVID kind of took things away. But, I mean, certainly... I thought Logan Thompson's performance was one for the ages in this franchise. I thought it was a shame that the guys in front of him kind of let that go by wayside because he was so good. Like the saves that he made on Tyler Seguin, not once but twice in that second period.
Yeah.
And I don't know for a fact, but it looked like after the second save, Thompson may have said something to Tyler Seguin. The first save that he made on that 2-on-0 for Seguin or 1-on-0 and
it was a breakaway.
It was a shorthanded.
Yeah, the Golden Knights gave up three shorthanded breakaways.
And Logan Thompson stood tall, and if memory serves correct, he went down and he put his pad in front of the post and the middle of the net, and he just shut Tyler Seguin down. And you know, Seguin, I know we don't get to hear the post game. But Seguin was asked in the postgame presser, because the way it works is the locker rooms are open, then each team brings out two players and the coaches. And Tyler Seguin was basically asked, like, how did you guys solve Logan Thompson? And he just looked at Wyatt Johnston and said, that's our answer right there, Wyatt Johnston. Like, if Wyatt Johnston, first of all, the goal he scored to win the game was, I still don't know how he beat Thompson, because it was almost an impossible angle. But it was a great play. Like, Wyatt Johnston has been the Stars' best player in this series by far and away. And, I mean, the performance.
No, he has not been the Stars' best player in the series far and away.
Who's been better?
Logan Stankoven has been better on the whole throughout the majority of the three games. Stankoven has been more impactful. Johnston scored two goals, and it was in the victory, and it's the overtime game winner, and that's recency bias by a long shot. But Stankoven has been kind of the engine, the driver for this team throughout the majority of the series.
I mean, I think production is certainly something, because Johnston has the goals.
He didn't have them until Saturday.
Well, but he scored the two biggest goals in the series for the Stars.
Right, but when you sit there and you say that he has been their best player far and away, you have to be impactful in the rest of the games. It cannot just be, well, because he was impactful in the one game that Dallas won, that he has been their best player. I don't think Wyatt Johnston has been very noticeable outside of the performance he put in on Saturday night. And there have been there have been two games before that.
He had some really, really good looks in game two. I think Logan Thompson was just better.
Yeah, I think we'll agree to disagree on that one, because I don't think Wyatt Johnston has been as impactful as he could be for this Dallas Stars team three games in. He had a great game in game number three. And for the Golden Knights now, it's about trying to shut down Wyatt Johnston and the Dallas Stars, specifically their rush game. 702-876-1340, that's the number, 702-876-1340. We open up the phone lines every single week. First segment belongs to you. We do have lines open if you want to call in right now. The main question that I'm after is, was Game 3's performance from Logan Thompson the best goaltending performance in Golden Knights history? Chris Chapman touched on a game from Aiden Hill last year down the stretch against the New Jersey Devils. It was right here in this building inside T-Mobile Arena. That was a great performance from Aiden Hill. I talked a little bit about Robin Leonard's performance Game 7 against the Vancouver Canucks, where he comes up with a massive glove save. That one's not going to look as good, maybe, as the Logan Thompson one, because if I'm remembering it correctly, the Canucks didn't have a high volume of shots. They didn't create a ton of dangerous chances, but it was one of those games where you needed a couple of big saves from your goaltender. You got them, and it allowed the Golden Knights to move on in that postseason run. And then you look back, I think the only other situation maybe you're looking at in the postseason, I mean, obviously you look at Aiden Hill and what he did in the Stanley Cup final. That stick save on Nick Cousins was pretty remarkable. Out-duel Sergei Bobrovsky, who is in the news today. You know, I look at it and I say probably Marc-Andre Fleury's opening round in the postseason for the Golden Knights inaugural season against the Los Angeles Kings. Like, if you want to take best overall goaltending performance in a playoff series, it was probably Fleury in that series against Los Angeles. You can even make the argument that he was every bit as good, if not better, in the Western Conference Final that year against the Winnipeg Jets. So there are certainly aspects you can go to, but I just think, given this is just Logan Thompson's third postseason start in his career, and he comes up with 43 saves and nearly steals a game from the Dallas Stars, it's hard not to say that was one of the greatest goaltending performances we've seen, especially because the Golden Knights gave up so many odd man rushes, because the Golden Knights gave up so many good quality chances to the Dallas Stars. They did not defend well on Saturday night, and yet they were right there. Very simply, very easily, it could have been a 6-0 game 30 minutes in.
You know what's crazy? I'm thinking about that playoff series against the Kings, and the game that jumps out at my mind was the game two against L.A. It was a double overtime game where Fleury was phenomenal. They went to double overtime, and I believe it was Eric Halla scored the game winner for the Golden Knights in that one. But what's crazy is, as good as Marc-Andre Fleury was in that game, Jonathan Quick was better.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think Jonathan Quick had something like 55 saves in that game. Like, it's mind blowing when I think back about that game in particular. You know, you and I talked a little bit about it before we came on the air, but the game that Laurent Brossoit played in game two against Winnipeg, and specifically that first period, because if Laurent Brossoit was not on his game against the Winnipeg Jets, Golden Knights might have been down 2-0 in that series, but he played a phenomenal first period before William Karlsson started getting things rolling, and the Golden Knights rolled in game two, and then they rolled in the rest of the series. But that particular period by Laurent Brossoit, that first period, I think Winnipeg led 1-2. I think they led 1-0 after one, but it was such an important moment for Laurent Brossoit because that was really the moment where you were like, and then William Karlsson scores a goal where you're like, you know what? The Golden Knights are going to be okay. But had Laurent Brossoit not been on his game, they could have been in trouble in that one.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let's dig into the text line. Tim Doyle says Logan Thompson, even in the loss, was the number one star of the game. Saturday night, VGK team is a fun roller coaster ride. One day, they play lights out. The next, they play not to their level, not to their standards. I have VGK winning the series in six. Thanks. So Tim touches on something that I think is interesting. Obviously, first two games of the series, the Golden Knights defended well. They took away the middle of the ice. There really wasn't much of a rush game to be spoken of for the Dallas Stars. And in game three, it completely changed. The neutral zone was wide open. The Dallas Stars were able to find those transition opportunities. Chapman, you were talking about it. There were multiple breakaway opportunities. The Golden Knights, their only power play of the game, I think they allowed three odd man rushes or breakaway opportunities over that two-minute stretch. So not their finest in terms of shutting down the rush, not their finest in terms of shutting down quality scoring chances against. Did you notice anything that Dallas did differently, or was it more or less self-inflicted by Vegas?
Well, I think Dallas did a better job, especially early on, at winning those puck battles along the boards. But as the game progressed, Vegas got better. Like, it was crazy because it was basically a tale of two games, because the first 30 minutes, I thought Dallas could have been up 4-5-0. And then as soon as Brady McNabb scored that goal, you kind of got the feeling that Vegas was going to come back and make a game of it. And then in the third period, it was like a repeat of the previous two games, the way the Golden Knights shut the Stars down. Like, they had, Dallas had 30 shots with 10 minutes to go in the second period. And you're thinking, they're going to end up with 55, 60 shots in this game if they keep playing this way. And they ended up not even getting close to that at the end of regulation because Vegas kind of amped it up and they started locking down again. And then in the overtime, I thought Vegas reverted back to what they looked like in the first period. They were a bit passive. They were kind of sloppy at times. I thought maybe they looked a little tired. I mean, I don't know what changed in between the third period and the overtime, but Dallas, again, they played a lot more desperate than the Golden Knights, and I know you can't replicate that, you know, the desperation, but I thought Dallas played like a very desperate team, and they were the better team.
So my take on it isn't necessarily desperation. I think the Golden Knights' puck management wasn't where it needed to be. I think decision-making wasn't where it needed to be. I think more than anything, the Golden Knights, their biggest issue in Game 3 is that where in Games number 1 and 2, if there wasn't a play to be made, what did the Golden Knights do? They dump pucks in. They put it in good spots. Jake Oettinger couldn't impact the breakout, and the Golden Knights got to work on a forecheck. And in Game 3, that just never really happened, mainly because the Golden Knights, just inside the offensive blue line, were stopping up, trying to make a play, trying to force a play, turning pucks over in that dangerous spot, and it allowed Dallas's transition game to really, really blossom. And so when that's the case, you go into Game 4 feeling like it can be an easy fix. Doesn't mean simple, but it can be easy. If the Golden Knights just shore up their decision-making and their puck management, I think they'll be able to get closer and closer to what we saw in Games 1 and 2 as opposed to what we saw out of the Golden Knights in Game number 3. Let's go back out to the phone lines, bring in Rob. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I think Game 3 was nothing more than a desperate team playing desperate, and the Golden Knights didn't match it. You can't make up desperation. They knew if they lost that game, the season's most likely over. Mm-hmm. You got a Golden Knight team feeling good about themselves. Let's face it, they come home, they hang out with their wives, girlfriends, kids, and meanwhile, all Dallas is thinking about is how we're going to win this game, and you've seen it. As soon as the puck dropped, they were a better team, and somehow we tied it up, but overtime looked like the first period. They just had more juice. and they were more desperate. And you'll see a better team, better Golden Knights team tonight, because now we got a little desperation. We don't want to go back tied. And I just think when you got two teams that are evenly matched, even last year, a couple overtime games, that's the difference. It's really who wants it more. And I think tonight, I think we'll get a win tonight because I think we realize we're not going to squander home ice and lose two. And I think you'll see a better team. I don't think it has anything to do with X's and O's or anything like that. I just think one team needed it, and you've seen it.
I mean, I think that to a degree, the fact that the Golden Knights kept turning the puck over did feed into Dallas winning the game. But, you know, desperation is an aspect of it, right? The Dallas Stars didn't want to go down 3-0 in the series, especially understanding that there were still two more games to be played inside T-Mobile Arena. So thanks, Rob, for the call. I appreciate it. I'm with you in that Dallas did exactly what they wanted to do in Game 3. They get a win. They have an opportunity to get the series back even after tonight's game. And for the Golden Knights, it's a great opportunity to push this one to 3-1 and have a chance to close out the Dallas Stars on Wednesday in Game number 5. And by the way, we just found out the start time for Game 5 will be 4:30 p.m. Pacific. That means a 3:30 p.m. puck drop, a little bit earlier than what we're used to. But hey, if we're going to go to overtime, we might as well start early. And for whatever reason, I don't have a real good feeling, or not a good feeling. I don't have a real good sense of what we're going to get tonight between Vegas and Dallas. But Game 5 is giving me playoff overtime vibes. That's all I can tell you right now. Let's take a break. Come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. One-Timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-Timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. And in a wild turn of events that nobody saw happening, the New York Rangers swept the Washington Capitals. I'm kidding. We all knew that the New York Rangers would win their opening round matchup against the Washington Capitals. It's what happens when you are the President Trophy winner and you are playing a team that, frankly, should not have made the playoffs. Now, give Washington a lot of credit here. I'm not trying to bag on the Washington Capitals. But the fact of the matter is, when you have a team that has a minus 37 goal differential, we can't be surprised, we can't be shocked when they get swept in the first round. They were always going to have a hard time here in this series. It was always going to be an uphill climb for the Washington Capitals. Now, I don't think anyone expected Alex Ovechkin would be held pointless in 4 games. I don't think anybody expected that it was going to be quite as simple as it was for the New York Rangers. But the fact of the matter is, this was always going to be an easy first-round matchup for the Rangers. And if it wasn't, then there'd be questions about whether or not the Rangers are for real. However, the part that I'm struggling with here is I don't know what to make of the Rangers. I mean, they did what they needed to do. Certainly, they took care of business, and they made it as efficient as possible. But I don't think that you can glean anything about whether or not the Rangers are or are not legit or Stanley Cup contenders. I know they're a great team in the regular season. I know that they were able to get through the opening round, but I don't know that I have a better read on how deep the Rangers are going to go based on what they were able to do to the Washington Capitals in the first round.
Well, it's
going to
get a lot tougher in the second round. That's for sure. You're going to be playing another team that has the potential to win the Stanley Cup. So, I mean, assuming something absolutely insane doesn't happen in that series, but what blew my mind about that series was the stat line for Alexander Ovechkin.
Yeah.
0 points in the entire series.
Yes.
Like, no goals. I mean, not like we expected him to have too many assists. But, I mean, I think the Rangers are for real. I know that series was one that was against a team that probably should not have been in the playoffs. They got there by default, basically. But you're right. The Rangers did everything they needed to do in that series, and now the playoffs really begin for the New York Rangers.
Mm-hmm. And that's the interesting aspect of it, because in a sense, more than likely they're going to be playing a team in Carolina that's essentially in the same boat. Like, I know the Islanders won game four. I know that, you know, at least Carolina's dealt with a little bit of adversity in the first round. But more than anything, those two teams are in a really good spot because we expect Carolina will advance. We expect it to be the Rangers and the Hurricanes. And it's really going to be the first test for either of those two teams in the playoffs. So maybe it's a good thing for the Rangers that they are in that bracket and that they have Carolina coming up next. Again, barring anything monumental happening and the Islanders coming back and winning that series. Okay, Sergei Bobrovsky, Connor Hellebuck, Thatcher Demko, they were named finalists for the Vezina Trophy this year. It seems like this is Connor Hellebuck's to lose. And it is ironic given the fact that Hellebuck has allowed a ton of goals and was pulled yesterday in Colorado against the Avalanche. But it's a good thing, as I said before, that playoff performance is not impacted in this voting.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be Hellebuck all the way. I can't imagine that he would lose out. Demko, good season. I don't know if he is at the same level as Connor Hellebuck. But what's interesting to me is that Bobrovsky was a finalist, and he didn't even start 60 games. I mean, Anthony Stolar has got a ton of starts for the Florida Panthers during the regular season, and Bobrovsky's numbers, while good, I don't know if they're Vezina good for the amount of starts that he had. I guess what I'm saying is Connor Hellebuck's going to win it. I don't think it's going to be particularly close.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's Hellebuck, probably Demko, then Bobrovsky. Was there anybody that you felt was slighted in this? One goaltender you'd put in there over, say, Bobrovsky or Demko?
Well, certainly nobody from the Devils. I would have to go look at the numbers for Shesterkin to see what they were. I don't think it was a particularly strong but group of players who had an argument to be made. I just think Hellebuck was so much better than everyone else this year that I think you're just putting two guys in there who had good but not great seasons.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right. Did you watch Game 4 between Vancouver and Nashville yesterday?
I did. It was phenomenal. This is why I love the playoffs.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is. The Nashville Predators were in complete control of that game. Now, it's wild because we've talked about injuries a lot when it comes to the Golden Knights over the course of this season. And we also kind of hinted at it down the stretch that, like, Vancouver hadn't really gone through that. Now, they lost Thatcher Demko down the stretch for a couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks, and it was harder and harder for Vancouver to kind of keep their pace going at the rate that it was earlier on in the year. But Demko came back last couple of games of the regular season. Everything looked good. He plays game one, gets the win, gets hurt. Then Casey DeSmith comes in, plays game two, loses, plays game three, gets the win, and then Casey DeSmith gets hurt. And so now, at least presently, it's Archer's Shelobs or Shelobs. Now listen, I'm not trying to sit here and say that I'm more right than anybody else, but if you listen to the game yesterday, the pronunciation was Shelobs, not Shelobs. But anyway, I digress. Shelobs comes in, and he played a pretty good game. You know, like, Vancouver's going three deep now with goaltending. And you're not just talking about replacing anybody, but you're replacing Thatcher Demko, who's a finalist now for the Vezina Trophy. And the Vancouver Canucks had nothing going on in that game. Offensively, they were miserable until they pulled their goaltender. 2 minutes left. And the Nashville Predators have an opportunity to tie the series at 2-2 and take advantage of a banged-up Vancouver team. And the Canucks pull their goaltender, and Brock Besser scores a goal. And he makes it 3-2. And then they pull their goaltender again, and what happens? Colton Sissons rings a puck off the post in the empty net, and the Vancouver Canucks come back. They tie the game with about 7 seconds left in regulation, and then Elias Lindholm wins it in overtime. Brock Besser had a hat trick, and the Predators scored three goals in about 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes of runtime, and they erase what would have been a 2-2 series tie. And they have an opportunity to close it out at home in game number 5. An unreal turn of events there.
Yeah, and I'm going to eat crow on this because I didn't think Vancouver had a chance to win this series without Thatcher Demko. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're legit. They're a good team. I think I picked against them in the series. I threw dirt on their grave when Demko went out. They're a lot better than I think I gave them credit for, and last night showed why. No quit. And that's the Rick Tocchet effect.
Yeah.
I mean, that team in years past loses that game.
Sure. And I just want to, like, throw something out there when it comes to pulling your goaltender. Did you see what Vancouver did each time they pulled their goaltender?
No. What did I miss?
Okay. So what you missed was Vancouver in their own zone in full possession of the puck, and Shelov's went. Meaning, they were able to get their goaltender off while they had possession of the puck, and they were able to get the extra attacker on, and then they rushed up the ice, and then they initiated their breakout so that they had truly six players attacking five.
You know what? That is one of my pet peeves, because I see it so often where the goalie will go to the bench, and the puck is against the boards. It might be in the offensive zone, but, like, there's a puck battle.
Yeah, and you don't have the ability to outnumber.
Right. And it's so frustrating to watch when you're watching a game and you see a team lose possession of the puck before the goalie's really even off the ice.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening most of the time, they give up the goal on that point, and the game is over. But I did not notice that. I'll have to pay attention to it more, but that's the way you need to do it. Like, that's the way it should be done.
100%. Because it gives you an opportunity to actually maximize 6-on-5, as opposed to hoping that you get a favorable bounce or you're able to win that race. Actually create the situation where you can outnumber a player instead of having a guy come on the ice late. I love that thought process from Rick Tocchet and the Vancouver Canucks, and it gives them now a 3-1 series lead and an opportunity to close it out in game number 5. Those are your one-timers for today, Monday, April 29th. We're back with more next on the VGK Insider Show. Wrapping up hour number 1 of the VGK Insider Show. We will be with you for about 20 minutes or so, and then pregame tonight will start at 5:30, getting you set for a 6:30 p.m. puck drop. And as we mentioned earlier, game number 5 between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars is necessary thanks to Dallas's victory in game number 3. That start time is 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. So 4:30 puck drop in Dallas, game 5, Wednesday. That means a 3:30 p.m. pregame show, 4:30 p.m. puck drop. You know, we didn't touch on in one-timers. We didn't touch on Winnipeg being down 3-1, another brilliant performance from Colorado Avalanche, great goal from Cale Makar. We didn't touch on a masterful defensive performance from the Edmonton Oilers, 1-0 victory last night against the Los Angeles Kings, giving Edmonton a 3-1 series lead. So I'll ask you this question, Chapman. Who's in more trouble? And I think the answer is probably both of them, but I'm not just talking about this series. Who's in more trouble in this series and moving forward? Is it the Winnipeg Jets in being down 3-1 to Colorado, or is it the Los Angeles Kings being down 3-1 to Edmonton?
No, I think it's the Kings.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Yeah.
And I think there's some real question marks, I think, in terms of personnel on that roster.
Say what you mean.
I think Pierre-Luc Dubois has got to go.
He's in year 1 of an 8-year deal.
Well, Good luck.
$8.5 million.
Good luck.
He's got 7 by 8.5 remaining.
After
this season.
What a monumental failure, that trade. And the funny thing is they traded him with the other team in this equation, who I think going forward they'll be okay. You know, because then again, you know what?
Hellebuck postseason is a concern.
And he's in year one of an 8-year deal.
And Mark Scheifele,
he's not a kid.
Hasn't been great. Like, it's fair to say that they're both equally in trouble. And here, like, you're never going to get a better scenario for Winnipeg, where you've got home ice advantage against Colorado. It was a great year all the way around. The vibes were immaculate.
Yeah.
No Gabe Landeskog. And it's deja vu. It's exactly what happened to them in round one last year against Vegas. It's happening again against Colorado.
You know what? I think maybe L.A. could potentially save themselves because they've got a guy in Quentin Byfield who I think is going to be an absolute star. He's just starting to scratch the surface, so that could be their saving grace. But, man, they're both in trouble, I think.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show coming up next right here on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Hands it off, left circle, McNabb. Dorofeev, one-timer, blocked, rattles around, score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin. Score! Noah Hanifin powers the goal.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Monday. Vegas Golden Knights, Dallas Stars, Game 4, opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's coming at you in just a little bit, about 90 minutes or so to puck drop. At least that's what it says. I wouldn't be surprised if we dropped the puck a little bit later than 6:40 p.m. But pregame show will start at 5:30. We will take you all the way up to that right now. And Chris Chapman, we haven't really talked a lot about game number 3, so we'll do that now, then get into our game ratings, and we'll hear from Bruce Cassidy from earlier today in which he talks about some lineup tweaks and changes for the Golden Knights going into game number 4. So that being said, game 3, 3-2, overtime loss, Wyatt Johnston scores 2 goals, the first goal of the game and the last goal of the game, wins it in overtime. Logan Thompson, a phenomenal performance, the best of his career for sure. If it's not the best goaltending performance in Golden Knights history, it is without a doubt the best goaltending performance of Logan Thompson's professional career. And with that comes, I think, the expectation that Logan will bring confidence out of that game. Even though he did not get the result, even though the result wasn't where it needed to be or where you'd like it to be if you're Logan, I think you can at least kind of pull back a little bit and recognize how great of a performance it was, and it should be something that gives him confidence moving forward.
Yeah, he played a great game. Mm-hmm. There's really no other way to put it. I think I tweeted something out. There's a lot of adjectives to describe how bad the Golden Knights are playing right now, but they're all the total opposite of how Logan Thompson is playing, and that was with maybe like 13 minutes ago in the second period. Look, Logan Thompson was the reason the Golden Knights didn't get blown out of the building.
Yeah.
He's the reason the game went into overtime. And I know people could say, oh, he got a shorthanded goal and you got the great goal by McNabb. The dam didn't break or whatever. But the reality is the dam did break. Mm-hmm. You just had a spillway at the end of the dam and Logan Thompson, who played, I think you're right, the best game of his career. There were multiple opportunities for Dallas to really put that game out of reach. And every single time Logan Thompson found a way to come up with an unbelievable play. Bruce had talked earlier in the year about a goalie needing to play. I think it's bound to happen, right? But we were talking about it in the break, too.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But Bruce had said at times this season he needed a goalie to steal a game for them.
Yeah.
And Logan Thompson did everything he could to steal the game for the Golden Knights last night or on Saturday. The problem was the guys in front of him really didn't do much to steal that game for them. So, you know, it's a shame that Logan didn't get the win because he certainly deserved it. I think he was the first star of the game, which is pretty crazy considering that they lost. But he was there's not enough praise that we could heap upon him for how well he played on Saturday night.
Yeah, it was a great performance from Logan Thompson. There's a short list of position players that I think had strong games individually for the Golden Knights. At the top of that short list, to me, was Braden McNabb. He has a goal and an assist. He's instrumental in the Golden Knights' comeback in the second period. He's already got two goals in the playoffs. He's a point-per-game player so far in this opening round series. I know you're a big Braden McNabb guy. You look at him, you think he's underrated. I would agree with that assessment. I think that from, you know, an individual standpoint, Braden McNabb kind of gets lumped in to the collective when it comes to this team's defensive structure, but not so much when it comes to, you know, his individual accolades and what he does to kind of move that forward. And I think Braden had a phenomenal game top to bottom for the Golden Knights in game number three.
Yeah, you know, and maybe it wasn't the time to ask him, but he did speak to the media after the game. And I asked him, was he just trying to clear that puck, or did he know that Jack Eichel was there? And he kind of chuckled a little bit, and he's like, I had no idea he was there. So he was just trying to clear the puck, but it was, listen, sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're fortunate, and McNabb was you know, he made the right play, he cleared the puck, and it just so happened that Jack Eichel was able to corral it and lead that 2-on-1. I was so afraid that Jack was going to pass it.
Oh, not a chance.
And he buried it,
yeah.
And Ottinger had zero chance. You know, Carlson ran good decoy there, and that's the kind of play where I'd like to see the Golden Knights get a little bit more transition-wise, and I know Dallas doesn't give up a whole lot, but it was one of those plays where you're like, you know what, maybe, just maybe, they're going to find a way, because I believed when they tied that game up, they were going to win the game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I just thought they were going to dominate the third period, and they did. Mm-hmm. They had a chance maybe to win it at the end of that third period. It looked like, I think it was Chandler Stephenson had an opportunity, and I thought, man, they're going to find a way to win this game. I just believe in my mind that they're, and my heart, that they're the better team, and the better team is going to find a way to win at 2-2, the final period of the game. It didn't happen. Dallas was able to survive that third period. And, you know, Wyatt Johnson makes a great play in overtime to beat Logan Thompson.
You know, we talked about Logan Thompson, just mentioned Braden McNabb. Anybody else stand out to you? Like, I know collectively it was a poor performance from the Golden Knights, but, you know, I mentioned a short list. I think Jack Eichel certainly had his moments, not top to bottom 60 minutes, but certainly had his moments, especially as the Golden Knights got better in the third period. Anyone else that you feel is worth talking about before we get into the game ratings?
You know, it was funny because Jack had a really bad turnover, and the person I was sitting next to said, Jack Eichel is going to have a phenomenal game going forward, and he did.
Yeah.
And I can't remember exactly the situation. It was just a really poor pass by Eichel, and it led to something the other direction for Dallas. I think it was in the second period. And from that moment on, Jack Eichel was really good. I'm just trying to think. I don't really feel. I thought the fourth line had their moments, mm-hmm. where they were okay, but to be honest, and I know he's banged up a little bit, but I think the Carlson line's got to get going, Ryan. Like,
yeah.
I think, and it's evidence Bruce Cassidy feels that way as well.
Sure.
I think, and it's hard because Tomas Hertl hasn't really had an opportunity to play with Anthony Mantha or William Carlson, and moving him down and moving Brett Howden up, I thought it was a tough position for him to be in, but I think that line's got to get going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works out. We'll get to Bruce Cassidy in just a minute, in which he talks about some of the lineup tweaks we might see ahead of game number four. But before we do that, let's get into our game rating, game number three of the opening round of the playoffs.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! All right, go for it.
It's a fireball. It's a one. Mm-hmm. It's game three. You're up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You have an opportunity to really basically end the Dallas Stars season for all intents and purposes. And they came out flat. They didn't play a good game. They were sloppy. I thought outside of Logan Thompson, there really weren't a ton of bright spots. I know we mentioned the game Braden McNabb played, and maybe he's the only other one. But you got to be better. And I think this is a situation now. We're in the playoffs. It's either a one or a five. And it's a one. You come out, you lose to Dallas at home, game three, up 2-0 in the series. It's going to be a fireball no matter what.
I don't disagree with that. It's a fireball. It's a 1 out of 5 for me. If you are allowing me the opportunity to rate Logan Thompson, it's a 5 out of 5.
Or a Dom P.
A 5 out of 5. It was a phenomenal performance from Logan Thompson. My hope is that that fuels Logan and it gives him more confidence. I know when you look at it on the surface and you say, okay, well, we all recognize he was great. He was excellent for sure. But at the end of the day, you've spent enough time around Logan where it's wins and losses. It's results. Like, that's all that matters to him, right? Like, as well as he plays, if he doesn't get the result that, you know, is just because of how he's playing, I think that he's going to hold on to that, right? He wants to win every game that he plays. He wants to help this team win every game that he plays. He did his part. He just was let down by the team in front of him. I don't want the result. I don't want the end product and the fact that it did not result in a win to be something that makes Logan feel like he did not do his part. He did his part, and I hope that performance from Logan gives him more confidence moving forward. I think that it will, because I think you can really look at that one objectively and say it should have been 6-0 Dallas at the midway point of the game.
Yeah.
It should have never gotten to overtime, and the only reason that it did was because of a brilliant performance from Logan Thompson. Use that, internalize that, move that forward, and be every bit as good here in Game 4 as he was in Game 3.
Yeah, I look back to when we first got to see a large sample size of Logan Thompson, and that was 2 years ago when they missed the playoffs. But Logan Thompson was the reason why this team even had a chance to make the playoffs down the stretch, because he played so well at the tail end of that regular season. And it seemed like every game he was knew he was going to come out and be really, really good. And then you look at the start of last season, and it seemed like he was able to catapult one good performance into the next, and it earned him an All-Star appearance.
Yeah.
First rookie goalie since, I think, the 80s, and the goalie coach here, Sean Burke, to make the All-Star game as a rookie goalie. So, look, I mean, there's a reason why that happened, and it's because Logan was able to put together a string of really solid performances. And I think this is a guy, and I certainly haven't had the opportunity to talk to him about it. You know, generally you don't get to talk to goalies all that much. And my belief is Logan Thompson, while he may not say it publicly, I think he feels like that could have been him last season leading this team to the Stanley Cup. And it's not a knock on Aiden Hill. It's nothing. It's not a shot at him or anything. And it's not a him certainly thinking Aiden didn't deserve it, because I don't believe that Logan operates that way. I just think in his mind, he thinks, you know what, I could have elevated my game to play at the same level that Aiden Hill did. Now is my opportunity. I don't want to let this go by the wayside.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's any professional athlete.
Well, he's a competitor.
Right? Like, you want to play the games. You want to play the games.
Right.
And that's what it kind of boils down to. Now, I do think, and I'm expecting, that the team in front of him is going to be much better tonight than they were on Saturday, and mainly because of how well Logan played in Game 3.
Like, well, I think they feel that they let him down.
You owe him one, right? Like, the team collectively owes Logan Thompson a really strong performance. So hopefully they're able to get to that tonight in this game, Game 4, against the Dallas Stars. Let's go to Bruce Cassidy. Earlier today, he spoke with the media after morning skate. He addressed, you know, kind of the areas that the Golden Knights can be better, whether or not William Karlsson, who missed skate this morning, would go tonight, as well as another lineup tweak or two. So let's go to Bruce Cassidy from earlier today.
Didn't see Karlsson out there. Any update on him?
Yeah, he'll play tonight.
Any other lineup changes?
Mario's going in for Mantha. Other than that, same.
Where do you think you can be better defending against those exits along the walls?
Well, we got to play through their hands. I think there's a lot of times we're going up as defensemen or even forwards, and we're kind of doing flybys because we want to work our way back above them. And that gives them an extra second for the D now to join. And now there's a bit of a sort out. If we don't close and it's not identified, by the D or the forward, because it usually could be a D coming up or a forward laterally or reloading. And we need to be better at that. We need to close on that guy, whether the D goes up and ends it, and the forward reads off him, gets over the middle speed, or the forward gets up and ends it because the D wasn't able to get there on time. He recovers into the middle to get over their speed or at least neutralize it. That's where we need to be better in those areas.
The dump-ins have been good. And the
too many goalie handles the other day. We got some back, though. So at the end of the day, he plays the puck well, Ottinger, in terms of getting out and stopping it. I don't think he's up-ice threat, so it's like some guys are. Most guys aren't. So, but he's effective with it and efficient. So we got to do a better job of maybe having their D facing up against the glass, because that's, you know, that's when you can, the physicality can come in. It's really hard to join when you're looking at people in the front row as opposed to, you know, what's going on up the ice. So that's where we could be better. But puck placement, you know, if they're doing a good job tracking you, it's not always that easy. You know, you want to make sure it's in there hard first and foremost, so it's not turned over the soft plays. But when you have time, you have a little, you know, with more time, you can probably put it in a better spot.
Bruce, I know you always want to start on time. You want to start fast, but guys in the room, we're talking about the first 10 minutes tonight. It's going to be pretty important in terms of getting to the game, finding the game, and imposing their will. I guess just what is the messaging behind those first 10?
Well, they said it, so back it up, right? That's it. It's it in a nutshell. Game two, they had, I thought we started well in game one. Fortunate penalty call, a high stick early. We took advantage of it, so now they're chasing the game. But we're in their end, drawing the penalty, right? We're ready to go. So game two, they were on their toes. We defended well enough, but still some opportunities. In game three, their urgency was better than ours for beyond the first 10, probably well after that. So, I mean, it goes without saying. We got to respond, and best way to respond is to start on time and let them know that this is how we're going to play. So how that plays out, we'll see. But we need to be involved early and engaged in the game.
Wasilin was out there for a lot of shot attempts in game three. How do you think they fared? It seemed like they tried to get their top line out there a lot.
Well, listen, we're trying to use whatever the case may be for face-off dots. Nick's line will play a lot when there's a face-off in our right dot. I trust them on our end. There was a face-off play they ran. Edmonton has done it to us. Where it's D to D and they flex out to the weak side. We've got to sort out with our center and D who's going to contest that. And we were late on that. And as a result, I think it was 53 got under Nick going back to the front of the net and beat him to a loose puck. So we have to correct that. They tried it again later. They didn't use that option. We were better that time, prepared for it. But the first time, we just, communication was a little slow. So, you know, we'll talk to them about that. But in general, yeah, their best way to influence the game is usually through forecheck, and that's get through the neutral zone, clean breakouts, good D zone to get a puck back. They did that up in Dallas, scored the winning goal because of their line doing that in game two. I mean, it was Hanifin who scored it, but they're the one that manufactured it, so we trust them. Credit to Dallas. They found a way to I'll say, outplay them, I guess, or find a way to score on them and get some opportunities. So that's a bit of a series. It goes like that. So we're not getting away from that matchup per se. Game results or how we're playing will dictate that, but I trust that line against anybody, and you know, put a check in Dallas's box for that game. I think they were the better line in game two, so let's hope we win the advantage in that one tonight, whoever they play against.
All right, so Bruce Cassidy earlier today after morning skate addresses William Karlsson. He will play tonight. He did not take part in skate this morning. Michael Amadio comes in for Anthony Mantha, play alongside Karlsson and Howden. You know, I look at that, and we know Michael Amadio was an impact player at times for the Golden Knights in the postseason last year. 5 goals, 5 assists, 10 points. Amadio fits with Karlsson, and he fits well. And, you know, when you hear Bruce talk about the ability to kind of win those battles along the boards, I think there's a couple of areas where Michael Amadio stands out to me. One, he's got a great defensive stick in the neutral zone. A lot similar in some ways to Mark Stone. He's got an ability to kind of bat pucks out of midair. He's got an ability to turn pucks over there, not to the degree that Mark Stone does, but it's a really good defensive stick in the neutral zone. And Michael Amadio wins battles. He just does. He wins battles along the walls. he's willing to go in there and make those plays, be hard to play against in that area. I think that that's something that, Bruce Cassidy's looking for from Amadio, specifically alongside Carlson. And he's also got that familiarity with William Carlson. Like, that really is a scenario where two players have chemistry. Now, the other aspect of this is simply that it puts Tomas Hertl back with Chandler Stephenson and Mark Stone. And best case scenario for the Golden Knights here is that that line starts to gel as Mark Stone continues to get better and better and better over time. And so I don't think we've seen Mark Stone at his best. I think it's coming. I really do. So as Stone gets better and Hertl gets more familiar, I think that line's really going to take off.
Yeah, I know the question will be asked, I'm sure, at some point for you in the post game. Why Amadio over Dorofeev? And I think it's simple. I think Amadio has experience. Amadio's a guy who's scored big goals in the postseason. So I think it's the right decision to go with Amadio over Dorofeev there, simply because I think Amadio has that. He's got that real-life experience in the playoffs. And Dorofeev, he'll have his opportunity, I'm sure. But right now, you got to go with the guy who knows how to get the job done, and that's Michael Amadio. So I think that that's the right decision. And I think, hopefully, Amadio will continue, because remember, he's a guy who was scratched last year. Uh-huh. And he always seems to come out and perform really well after he's been scratched. And, you know, I know it had to be tough for him to watch. I mean, this is a guy who scored a goal in the Stanley Cup clinching game last mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. He scored big goals in the postseason for this team last year. So I think for him, it had to be hard.
And overtime game winner in Winnipeg. Yeah. Absolutely.
After they blew a 3-0 lead in the third period in that game. So this is a guy who I think will take it personally that he was scratched. And again, much in the same way of Logan Thompson, I don't think he would view it as a personal slight. But he's a guy who believes, hey, you know what? I've done the job before. I could get the job done now. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, for the inevitable question that's going to come in the post game for you, that's why you go with Michael Amadio over Pavel Dorofeev. And I think for Tomas Hertl, he scored that goal early in the series, but I think he's kind of been a non-factor. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he just hasn't been able to get comfortable with anybody. So,
well, he hasn't had the same line mates more than two or three games in a row. And so, I think that's going to be the big challenge.
And
right?
I think that the job is trying to find the spot for him to play.
Sure.
And you have to imagine, as I do, that playing alongside Mark Stone is the best place for him.
I would agree with that, because if you can get that line going, all of a sudden
it's an unbeatable line.
You've got two legitimate number one lines, right? Barbashev, Eichel, and Marchessault, that scores at a top line clip. If you can get Stephenson, Stone, and Hertl to work together as well, then all of a sudden it becomes a matchup nightmare, especially if you can get the Carlson line going as well. Now, the other aspect from Bruce Cassidy that I thought was phenomenal was the idea that the players are leaning into start on time, right? You want to come out and dictate play for the first 10 minutes. They said it, now go out and prove it. I love that. I love that from Bruce Cassidy, because it's one thing, and we've seen this team at times really answer the bell when they know what the issue is, when they know where they have fallen short. Usually with a veteran group, especially one that has won before, and all the way throughout their playoffs last year, when there has been something that needed to be corrected, they course correct, and then they come out and they execute.
Well, both players that we talked to in the locker room after the game emphasized the start.
Yeah.
Brady McNabb and Mark Stone. And those are two guys who have always held themselves to high standards and always hold themselves accountable. So I think when Mark Stone comes out and he tells us, this is an unacceptable start by us.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what he's saying behind closed doors. Like, I don't picture Mark Stone as being the quiet guy who goes in there and says, rah, rah, guys. Great, great second half of the game. I think Mark Stone and the rest of those guys focused very hard on the first half of the game. And I think that's why you heard Bruce talking about it. Like, yeah, our guys held themselves accountable. And that was a big message last year. Remember, end of the year they didn't make the playoffs. There were questions about accountability. Mm-hmm. Very first press conference with Bruce Cassidy when he was announced, all about accountability. Well, now's an opportunity to go out and prove it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the Golden Knights open this game. I'm interested to see how they dictate pace against the Dallas Stars. And frankly, I'm interested to see how the Golden Knights respond after the counter strike from Dallas. It's still a great opportunity. They're still in a really good spot. However, this game is incredibly important. You do not want to go back to Dallas tied 2-2. If you're the Golden Knights, you want to put the pressure back on the Dallas Stars. The only way to do that is to come through with a victory. Game number four, that's coming up in just a little bit. Pre-game show is next right here on Fox Sports Las Vegas.